Hey, little girl, is your daddy home? Did he go and leave you all alone? I got a bad desire. Oh, I'm on fire. Tell me now, baby, is he good to you? And can he do to you the things that I do? Oh, no, I can take you high.
Welcome back to the Traumedy Podcast, everybody. How you all doing? It's Kenneth Allen bringing you another episode. Sorry about the little hiatus I took after doing the School's Out episode. It's been a summer of rebuilding, been a summer of ending things and beginning new ones. And so it took me a little time to get something back together. But here I am. Got to start somewhere. Got to begin with one foot forward and moving forward. And a lot of that means starting new things. And that's what I ended up doing at the beginning of this month, is starting some more fire science courses. And I had the pleasure of taking one in Oakdale, California, through fire instruction, through a mensch of a man named John Smith, Battalion Chief John Smith, who is the subject of today's interview. It was a real delight taking his course. And it just really inspired me to become both a better firefighter, fire commander someday, and a better instructor. And it just really blew my mind. And after the second day there, I said, I got to do an interview with this guy. And he was courteous enough to agree to do one with me. So I thank him, and I think you all will too. Oh, geez, there goes the phone. Sorry. See, what an unprofessional individual. I got the phone not on vibrate, but on noir sound. Anyway, That's my dad. Blame it on my dad. That's him texting. But I wanted to say you're really going to enjoy this. He's a fantastic guy. He's got a lot of stories, and he's a true hero. He's got an incredible story to tell that I felt honored enough to bring to the table. So remember, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, at the www.traumatypodcast.com website, where we will meet and greet you and answer all your questions and give you big kudos and your concerns and comments and everything. We listen. Thanks for listening to us. Remember, you know, sometimes things come to an end. You got to just keep pushing forward, baby. You got to, no matter what, because, well, what else are you going to do? What else are you going to do? So I do want to apologize for the fact that I screwed up on some of the volume control during the interview, so he's a little distant. And John, I have to apologize to you. I'm really sorry about that. I should have checked that beforehand. And then also, I'm trying to get this new Logic Pro going on the computer. See, here's a little issue. This is something I'm not too happy about, the big bite out of the fruit company out there. I had a really expensive program that worked on my old computer. Can't use the new Logic Pro on the new one, which means I had to go buy a new one. Anyway, hey guys, I know it's exciting. I know it's great stuff. You're riveted talking about software and Logic Pro. But my point is, what other choice you got? You got to get the job done. You got to move to the groove. You got to roll with the punches. You just got to call an audible sometimes and get it done. And I think that our guest today would agree with that. So without any more accolades and any more giving him everything his due, let his own words speak his own merits. Ladies and gentlemen, Chief John Smith. Thank you. And it was just interesting to see somebody who's already retired at the level of battalion chief be such a good instructor along with that. And so I was curious to see what exactly happened there. So, and how you came to this profession. So I wanted to go through was, I know you had some military background. Mm-hmm. What happened with the military? What inspired you to get into that? When you came out, fire and everything, and where you went from fire to chief, and then how you got into instruction.
I went back to captain. I retired a captain.
Really?
Yeah, I went back to captain.
Okay.
From a battalion chief's position.
All right.
Yeah, we had some financial difficulties.
So you took one for the team.
Wasn't too sorry about it.
okay.
Wasn't too sorry about it, yeah.
All right, so we're speaking with Chief John Smith, or now Captain. Well, I'll still call you Chief.
John
Smith, and it was the instructor for fire instruction in Oakdale, California. Just took class here. It's part of the new 2A series, the 2 series. Is you are able to sign up for these classes online. You can call in. It's very easy and accessible for everybody. So, John, without any further accolades, jump on in. So, yeah. So how did you start off eventually getting into this profession?
I like teaching.
All right.
I like teaching.
Did that come first?
Teaching didn't come first.
Okay.
No. I think when a lot of people get to the end of their career in their fire service, I think that apron string's kind of hard to cut. To just
Sure.
Some people like to just cut it off. Some people like to stay active in one form or another.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I saw. I think a lot of times people get so tired of the downside of our industry, the politics and the management labor fights that unfortunately happen
yeah.
sometimes, that I didn't want to go out with that bad feeling.
Yeah, the bad taste in your mouth, I was going
to
say.
I didn't want
yeah.
to bring any of that.
Yeah.
And I had told Kaylee that, well, actually it was kind of her idea, well, what do you want to do when you retire? Want to consult or be a volunteer? I said, I'm too old to do that. I said, I like to teach. I've always liked training, always liked teaching.
Yeah.
So I actually planned that a few years before I was going to retire. And in my 50s, I started working toward that. Went back to college and got my MBA in public administration.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I wanted to combine the experience with formal education to kind of help me out. And that was kind of a twofold process, but it ended up, the reason for going back to get my master's, ended up having three good things. I wanted to set an example for my four boys that get your education, keep on trucking, it's a job, but you got to do it. Dad can do it, you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to be able to answer some questions, maybe in more of a formalized academic atmosphere if my students have them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And another ancillary benefit of it was when I have the guys in the class and we do the learning partnership with Columbia Southern University, I can tell the young people out there in the fire service, if I can do it in my 50s, you can do it.
Right, yeah.
Because we're not working with Einstein here. And it was hard work for me.
It didn't
come easy. So,
okay, all right. How far did you go before you went military? Did you ever go college before that? Had you gone any education?
I went
beyond high school.
I joined the Navy when I was 17. My mom and dad had to sign for me, and that was in 19.
Wow.
And when I, my last year of high school, graduated in 1970. And so in May of 1970, I graduated. And Vietnam was going on at the time. And a lot of guys were trying to get into the Naval Reserve because they wanted to try to avoid the draft. I didn't. I liked ships and I liked boats.
Wow.
And my brother had been in the Navy and father was served in World War II, so I was kind of one of those patriotic kids.
Yeah.
I went in because I wanted to go in. And went to boot camp, and my always joke I tell my friends is everybody was on the bus going to Disneyland for the senior party and I was going to San Diego boot camp.
See you guys. Have fun out there. Yeah.
And
a little different party.
Anyway, it was. It's like the fire service. There was good times and there was bad times in the military. I was aboard the USS Midway, which is a museum now. It's an aircraft carrier, and they had a program called the 2x6 program. If you went 2 years active duty, you could be a reservist when you got out. So I was in that program, and spent my time on the Midway during the Vietnam conflict, and. I got an early out to get back to college to hit the semester. I got out of college to be a forest ranger.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Like the mountains. I really wasn't going toward a fire career.
Right.
So my friends I was in college with were mentioning that they go to work for what was at the time CDF or the Forest Service,
yep.
Seasonal firefighters.
Wildland, yep.
And I said to them, I said, you know, I just spent a lot of time on an aircraft carrier and a flight deck. The last thing I want to do is go fight another fire.
So, yeah, it's a different fire.
It's
an easier fire to put out there, but they
talked me into it. Long story short, they talked me into it, went down to Morgan Hill, took the test, got hired. And at the same time, I said, hey, this is kind of cool. So I ended up volunteering for Alameda County out in the Livermore Valley. They were a one-station department at that time called Alameda County Fire Patrol.
Okay.
And we took care of the rural areas. So I went out there as a deputy fire warden. We were part of the sheriff's department. That's kind of where my career started. So after that, of course, I fell in love with it and took a little sabbatical. A lot of people don't know this, but I spent 4 years there, and it was kind of a shaky job. We didn't know how long we were going to have a job, and another guy was coming back after a few years, had bumping rights.
Mm-hmm, right.
So how long do you want me to go?
Go as long as you want. We're free-form, baby. Yeah, we can do whatever. We can cut.
So I didn't know what I was going to do. By that time, I was like, okay, this fire department thing's not working out. This is kind of disappointing. Am I going to go back to CDF? Well, I had some friends. I was a scuba diver at the time and had some friends in a scuba diving club called Aquatutis in the Bay Area.
Okay.
In one of our Saturday meetings, we had a representative from one of the commercial diving schools come and talk to us. We're screaming for commercial divers. So, long story short, is I went to hard hat school and was a hard hat diver in the Gulf of Mexico.
Wow. Demolitions? Are you talking about
underwater construction.
Construction. Oil rigs. Gotcha. Right. Okay.
Working on oil rigs.
Right. Building them.
I've gone out there and worked for McDermott Root, working for Shell Oil, maintaining their oil rigs.
Right.
In the Gulf of Mexico.
That's great.
Lived in Gretna, Louisiana for a while.
Uh-huh. So, bachelor at this point?
Oh, bachelor.
Just floating around?
Yeah.
What were the shifts like? What was your contract? Were you out there for a certain number of weeks while you built this thing, and then they sent you someplace else?
A certain amount of time, then you got short time. You started out as a tender, and typically it took 6 months to get in the water, what they call breaking out to get into the water.
Okay.
They were hurting for people, so that process got accelerated.
Of course, yeah.
So we were bounce divers. And we would work anywhere from 10 feet to 220 feet doing maintenance like that.
Jesus.
And
you're on scuba, or are you using your umbilical? Right.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Yep. Yeah. Helmet. Mm-hmm. And so did that, and then was going to go to what they call SAT school, saturation school. And that's where you live in this capsule that's pressurized to the working depth. And you live in that, then you go down, 300-400 feet, do your thing for a period of time, then come up.
Right.
Well, two things happen to guys that are commercial divers. They're either very smart, very nuts, the guys that stay in it, or you get the crap scared out of you.
And because of an incident.
With that adventure.
Uh-huh.
I was in that group.
Oh, jeez.
Got the crap scared out of me at 200 feet, got inverted, helmet malfunctioned, and
holy cow.
Things went wrong, so bolted to the surface, got a little bit of nitrogen narcosis.
Mm-hmm.
Bends, thank God.
The bends?
Lodge in any, no cerebral damage, not that I know of, no eye problems, but I sunned my right knee. And anyway, that adventure ended, and I came back and worked in construction for a while and decided time to get back in the fire service. So I went to work for Moffett Field.
Okay.
Offered me.
Right, right.
And where Greg Thornton worked.
Mm-hmm.
Greg came in right after me.
Mm-hmm.
Did about a year and 8 months there and got picked up by San Mateo.
Mm-hmm.
Then I worked for San Mateo Fire Department until the mid-90s. And then we had moved out to Oakdale in 91, and we're on threes and fours. Got offered a promotion out here. And then I finished out my career out here with Stanislaus Consolidated. Fire Protection District is where
we're sitting. Gotcha. Okay.
12 stations.
Uh-huh. And, okay.
Was a hazmatter, ran the county hazmat team for a period of time, ran the swift water rescue team for probably about 10 years, kind of helped get that advanced and rewrote the swift water multi-agency program.
Nice. So like a mutual aid type situation, or now you're also consulting for other departments as well?
With us and Modesto Fire Department, a lot of the surrounding agencies, so we could we could respond to a swiftwater incident, which was kind of resource depleting for a lot of the agencies out here. So we came up with this master plan, swiftwater multi-agency, multi-jurisdictional response plan. And we did that and really enjoyed that. That was one of those benefits of going back to the captain. As I could get back in the water with my team.
Right, you actually get some visual experience again.
With my hazmat team and get back in the level A suit and do all that rescue ranger stuff. That
uh-huh.
Like. So, retired in 2012?
Mm, okay.
2011, I forgot when I retired.
4 or 5 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah.
4 or 5 years ago.
Okay, okay.
And so we started the school, and it's just been an absolute passion of Kaylee's and I. It's a lot of work, but we absolutely love it.
Yeah.
Absolutely love doing it. And, you know, there's an old saying with businesses that when you have a business and you invite the public in, the public comes in. Well, not true in this business. I mean, I get the greatest people from all over the state coming through that door. The friendships we've made and the privilege that we've had of working with all these people has really been,
fortuitous.
Emotional.
Good.
Incredible.
I had, obviously people in this class were coming in saying, we've heard nothing but great stuff about this.
That is so nice.
I mean, yeah, everybody's saying it. And after this class, it's there. It's obvious with every class. It must be. It must be. I mean, today, I'm bubbling over with excitement. Like I said, it's been a while since I've been this stimulated to go push forward on stuff.
Thank you.
It's just inspiring. So,
I'll tell you, mm-hmm. There's been a few times where the class just didn't go well.
Uh-huh.
The books that came, like the prevention class,
uh-huh.
I gave the guys assignments, and there's 3 chapter 9s, no chapter 10 and 11.
Great.
An inspection we always do is supposed to take all day, craps out. So there's been classes that we've had hiccups.
Yeah.
That didn't go as smoothly as, but to the credit of my students, everybody pretty much all understood.
And
we get through it.
But that's our whole career, right? Is rolling with a punch.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of, that's not working. How do we fix this instead? How do we move forward with this?
Yeah.
Which is nice. I mean,
The only thing I don't look forward to is getting too old where it's time for me to say, okay, I'm not keeping up.
Yeah.
It's time for me to go. But so far, so good.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, you're using the internet. You're doing everything that is still modern. And like you're saying, I would see this as difficult. So I teach also. I teach public City College.
Oh, good.
So I do, but I get the public coming in. It's the first step. It's the EMT students, and it's a lot of fun. It is something that rejuvenates me for sure. Giving back, always giving more seems to you get more.
Yeah.
When you make that next step, like you're saying, you're bringing in people that are working in the field. They're already, pretty much experts, or they're versed in the field.
Yeah.
I could see that as being a hard nut to crack when you're dealing with guys that are already there and having to teach to them, having to, but I don't see that as being difficult. You don't seem obviously not intimidated towards anybody. It's very accessible, if that makes sense. People aren't trying to shoot you down. You're very easily, you can take, what am I trying to think? You can internalize you very easily. So,
oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a funny story.
Lay it on me.
A lot of San Jose,
yeah.
I think was one of them, and Sacramento Fire Department, and Stockton. The guys that wanted to go up to battalion chief, all of a sudden now they require chief officer. And when these guys got hired as captains, they didn't require a company officer.
Yeah.
Now they have to, I've got hardcore Sacramento truck and engine captain, Stockton, San Jose, that have to come here and sit through a company officer,
mm-hmm.
and then go through my chief officer.
Yeah.
And I'm teaching them Command 1A.
Mm-hmm.
Got them up here in the hot seat on the simulator, on the Command Sim simulator. And they've all been just great and gracious. Some of the old boys trying to shove flow path down their throat wasn't too easy. But it was all great.
Yeah.
Positive.
You take
they were all very, they were great. I'll tell you something that the the only downside I found in this business with the school is I think at this point, well, as of last summer, I think we put 2,700 people through the school or something. So
right.
We've got friends from all over the state, from small departments, San Diego, even Australia.
Wow.
We've got a lot of guys that have come up and gone through the courses from Australian fire departments.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were sitting at home one morning and then we're getting ready, you know, we're watching the news and Kelly's making cookies in the kitchen. And then there's a big brush fire down south, or this particular one, I think it was the one up by, up on Highway 50. And a couple, there was a burnover and there were some folks hurt and we didn't have a lot of information. And I'm watching this and Kaylee's in there rattling around and then I hear her stop and I look around and she's, her eyes are welling up. And I said, what's wrong? I thought she stubbed her toe or something. She goes, I don't like this part. Did they say any names yet?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm listening, honey. I don't like this either. And she says, those are our kids out there. And I said, they've always been out there doing that. She goes, I know, but this is different. This is different, you know. This gets kind of personal. It shook her up.
Yeah.
It shook
yeah.
her up. Shook me up, too. I
of
didn't
course.
Think about that. And they're thinking, you know, Cal Fire, so many Cal Fire kids have been through here. I shouldn't say kids, but I think they're all younger than
well,
kids should
you.
Be. But
right.
that's one thing that when we hear about these fires, you know, she's always saying, are there any names, you know? And she comes in here and checks our QuickBook database, you know, and she's looking for names. Like, don't do that to yourself, honey.
Yeah, right.
So that's the downside of it.
Knowing that your kids are out there, as you call them. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a very different approach to a job. You're calling your clients kids. You know, as a family, I think that's beautiful. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
But I think that's, if more people did that, there's less issues anywhere, you know.
Yeah.
It's so much easier to talk to people about any problems or coach them or, I mean, everybody's it's a unit. It's a family.
It should be a family.
Absolutely.
It should be.
Yeah.
So.
That's a great way of looking at it.
Anyway, that's kind of how the school got started. That's our philosophy on it.
Mm-hmm.
And
so had you been teaching in other courses before that? When did you first realize that you liked teaching, you liked instructing?
Oh, just, you know, just teaching somebody to fly fish I like. Teaching somebody how to tie a fly, teaching somebody how to fly an airplane, or I love teaching swift water.
Mm-hmm.
That was my fun stuff, my passion.
Why do you think that is with swift water?
Oh, I can tell you why, because... when I got out of the service, some friends and I went backpacking in Yosemite, and I fell into the Merced River when I was filling up my canteen and was getting ready to go over one of the falls. I got beat up, broke a rib, tore my pack off my
Jesus.
Back. And ever since then, deathly afraid of white water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I used to be
yep.
like the stream fish.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't even go stream fishing. I was so afraid of white water. I said, okay, this is a bunch of bull.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to learn. It was Mark Hogan from Fremont. I went down to Knights Ferry up here, and I said, I told him that story.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I want to be a swift water technician.
Because?
I want to get over the sphere.
Yep.
And if I was that scared, I want to help other people get out of that. So I kind of get into it, and Mark was very instrumental in getting me to trust my gear and trust my instincts and read the river and read the water and be trained.
Uh-huh.
And I just, from there.
Right.
Yeah.
So because it stirred that thing in you, you did it.
Because it scared the living crap out of me.
Uh-huh.
And it gave me a fear that I hate having.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, hey, they come on the pools down here, you know, we're up in Pinecrest and fishing up in the stream. Oh, I'm okay. I'll stay
there. No, I'm done. Yeah, right. It's almost a debilitating.
It's debilitating.
And
it's like being afraid of heights or something.
Yeah, but you want to conquer it. We were talking a lot of kind of similar stuff in the class about that, where, you know, what sparks you to become great? And it is that kind of thing where... There's something in certain people.
There is.
That when it scares you, you go, well, I got to face this. Well, I have to. Because it gives you that energy. It's almost like your body saying, here's the energy you're going to need to overcome this. Let's put this to good use. You know?
It is. And that's, I think that's part of training in our industry.
Right.
Is getting an individual over a fear.
Right.
If it's heights, if it's confined spaces, putting an air mask on and getting into an ideal-age environment, or I've seen it all. I had people that were just white as a ghost when they they started going to traffic collisions, something that was going to, we could hear it's bad, we have it, and we have this. And I've had people, guys on my crew that I can look back there and just, they're just okay. You know, and that took some getting over.
Yeah. Yes.
That, and you hope that individuals don't have that career-ending call where, you know, lose a kid or something horrendous with
terrible.
A kid and
yep.
fire, I'm done. And that happens.
Of course it does.
That happens. So I think everybody's got those fears. You just, I think, where the profession comes in is getting around them.
Yeah.
Getting around them.
Getting around them.
And I'll be the first to admit, I'm not the happiest guy at Hyatt's up on the top of that hurdle. Some guys get up there and do jumping jacks. Me, I go up there because I get paid and it's my job. That's my sidewalk. But I don't do it for fun. I do it because it's my job.
Yeah. Yeah, I notice I get the primate hand grasp. And I can smile as much as I want, but if you look at my hand, it's white-knuckled, and it's just
you
a little bit tight. Yeah, right. Yeah, my toes are touching my heels. Yeah, for sure. Interesting. Good.
But there are people in this industry, other instructors, other chief officers, that are just phenomenal, phenomenal. They should not wish... You could get them all together and just run a mentor program. There's great guys in your department. All these departments are such dynamic, strong leaders
right.
that are just absolutely have perfected their craft, and they got it.
Mm-hmm.
Like Dick Winters on the movie.
Exactly.
They just got it.
Yeah.
And,
it's more than money. It's more than it has nothing to do with ego. It has to do with. I think the best leaders do it for personal perfection.
They do.
But then there's the other half of it, which is, let me teach you this, or let me show you by example.
Servant leadership.
It's amazing. And I don't know if you can teach that. I don't know if it's something that's inside you innately, or it's just, you know, I don't know how you can teach it. But, I mean, if you were to teach it, what are some of those tenets in that, you know, that...
Teaching character and leadership.
Yeah, yeah. And how do you teach to be a leader? You know, how do you teach somebody to do that?
Well, there's a lot of examples of we've got fire chiefs and supervisors that have gone through all the training we've all gone through and talked about all these things, the servant leadership, and it doesn't seem to stick.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I do my best. If it sticks or not, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I try to tell people, boy, throw the manager thing out. Be a leader. If you're a leader, you don't have to be a manager.
Yes, right.
If you're a leader, boy, you don't have to be a manager. And I think we've all worked for those captains and those PCs that I don't want to disappoint this guy.
That's it.
This guy's it.
Yeah.
I like him.
That's exactly it. You're with teachers and you go, God, I hope I get the right answer so they respect me. I hope I'm out there doing a good job. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know?
So they're going,
I hope I do right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
boy, hell, he's you just want to do right by them.
You do.
Yeah.
You do. And that's the way it should be.
Uh-huh.
That's that value-based thing where it just goes against every fiber to let down the unit.
Yeah.
Your company, your shift, your department, fire service as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
yeah, your team.
Too, that I think there are times in my career where I got jaded and I did let down, I think, the fire service. And I did, through fatigue or insecurities,
mm-hmm.
I didn't take as high a road as I should have, I think. Learn from it.
Right.
You know, everybody does that. Everybody makes mistakes. But if you learn from it,
that's
you know, everybody, you're going to lose your, I guarantee you'll lose your cool at some time.
Right.
And then you go, oh, geez.
What do you do at that point?
Yeah, you apologize.
You apologize, you come clean?
Yeah, you come clean. I screwed that up.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I screwed that up.
And if you can do it, then other people can do it,
yeah.
You know. Yeah.
Yep. You screwed that up.
Where do you think that don't want to let down the crew, the camaraderie? You think that came early as a kid with your father? You know, your dad was in the military. My dad was a firefighter. Grandfather's a firefighter.
Okay.
He was, oh yeah, third generation. Grandfather was in the Pacific, flying B-24s. I mean, that was instilled, whether I knew it or not.
That's character.
So when you're watching Dick Winters on, it's you get that inside you just going, that guy. Yep.
That was my
that
dad.
Guy. Yeah.
That was my dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, fortunately, a lot of us were fortunate enough to be raised in that environment. Some of us weren't. Some of us didn't have role models in our parents or people around us.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it in young people. that's tough to overcome, those insecurities and that big hole of insecurity they have in the middle of them. That's tough to fill. You know, can you take a young person like that and say, whatever happened to you in the past, take the good of it, learn from the bad. This is your family now. This is you, Mark, or this is you, Joe.
Yep.
This is where you break that chain and start being, where your son's going to say, my dad was a career professional firefighter, or my grandfather was a firefighter, like you said.
Right. It's almost easier for me. Well, it comes with its own challenge, but imagine, and I can't imagine, that, you know, someone coming from, you know, a hard background, you know, challenges, a broken home, nothing bounced around, and then trying to, you need that mentor. You need that person that could do that. Did you have people in the service, fire service, that you can look to and go, that guy pointed me in the right direction, or you took this and that from somebody?
Yeah, I did. Kind of had, you know what, learn from the bad, too. I had to have San Mateo, we had some strife with our chief. He was a very immoral, unethical person. He was hired to do the dirty deed, but
yep.
I also had guys in there. So that was pretty much, don't do like that. Look at the effect he has on people. Then you look at these guys. Had a great captain, Mike McCann, who was a Silver Star winner in Vietnam. He was just that guy, that captain.
Mm-hmm.
Calm, funny.
Right.
Smart, tough, and nice.
Smart, tough, and nice.
Smart, tough,
love
and
it.
Nice.
Yeah. Perfect.
Smart, tough, and nice.
Yeah.
And, boy, if you could just emulate a guy, I was thinking Mike McCann.
That's great.
And, he's just the guy everybody wanted to work for. The guy you didn't want to disappoint.
Right.
So. He didn't want to go to drill ground and multi-company drill and let Mike down.
Right.
He just didn't
want to do right by Mike.
God, it was terrible.
Right.
So,
Go ahead. Keep going.
Go ahead, Mike.
No, I'm looking. We're hitting everything. Have you always taught with this same kind of technique? Like what I've noticed, what I was seeing is you're able to take anybody's statement, whether it's right field, non sequitur, steer it right back into the relevance of the conversation.
That takes a little practice.
Takes a little practice, I assume, right? You know, that kind of stuff. Questioning the whole stuff we're talking about, you know, using evaluative managing, you know, based, you know, that kind of positive reinforcement. The way that you conduct things here is a positive atmosphere. Has that always been your mantra?
Yeah, you gotta, you know, that's, everybody says there's no such thing as a dumb question, but what is that person trying to say, or what is he trying to ask? What's he trying to say?
And right.
You shouldn't say, no, you're wrong.
Right.
You gotta say, well, that's applicable. And you gotta give him a chance to talk and think about it.
Yeah.
You know, Richard was a bit of a challenger.
Guy wanted to talk. Nothing wrong with that. You got him excited, Chief. Right?
Yeah.
What can you say? You got him so, he's bubbling over.
And your VC, Greg Thornton, boy, he's a pure problem guy.
Okay.
Man,
yeah.
And he'd get off on that other stream chasing trout. And he would go off, and I'd just be sitting there looking at him. And it got to be a joke with everybody. And he'd stop and turn around. He goes, I know there's no trout in that stream, right?
Trout
in that stream, great. So,
come on back.
Yeah, he'd get into the weeds about San Jose's things. Well, what San Jose's doing.
Right.
And we learned a lot from it.
Well, of course, there is that. So once someone starts going off track, still getting relevant.
Time for that. We got a couple extra minutes. Let the guy say what he's saying.
Right.
Yeah. It gets challenging when you got 40 people, though, and there's a lot of people that want to. You got to kind of get that class back in current.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
do it nicely. You know,
a couple of jokes here and there.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think the most important thing in teaching, you probably know.
I do whatever I can to be a good teacher.
Your personal skills.
Thank you.
That's
fun. It's a lot.
You got to make people comfortable. First, you got to make sure everybody's comfortable and relaxed, not uptight. No one's going to learn when they're uptight.
Right.
You know. So.
Yeah, I mean that's really. So I've been so here's my thing, which really kind of got me thinking about this. I've been. When I run scenarios with groups, my big thing is I love to put the stress That's the one thing with the scenario you can add is the teaching, but this is an added level of stress because it's real time and it's real assessment.
Yeah.
And I like that stress. Comes from that same thing we've kind of grown, that thing that stirs in you.
Yeah.
That's what gets me up and doing what I'm doing. Yeah. So when I feel that, right. So to me, I went, okay, so I want to breed that in other people. But then you realize a lot of people don't like that. You have to face it to a certain extent, but then there's maybe needs to be some kind of buffer there.
You got to know when to back off.
Exactly. And you're right. Okay.
You got to know when to back off. I get people in the command classes, we put the command simulator on, command sim.
Yeah.
I'll get them up there in that chair, and I do that on purpose. Can I just sit in my chair out here? No, you have to get up there, and we put the hot seat, we write the sign goes on the back of the chair, and you've got a portable up there, and I'm sitting back there running things, and I get them to document, and keep track, and keep accountability, and then I'll do a change of command on them, and I'll go up there, and I'll say, hey, what do you got going on here, Capital, this, and this, and this, and this, and I'll say, who do you got doing this, can you give me a PAR, just give me a PAR, engine one, and I've documented it, and who do you have on Rick, you split that company, do you remember you split that company,
mm-hmm.
Now you've lost a firefighter. In that mess,
mm-hmm.
You lost a firefighter. Where is he? Where's your firefighter? And I'll
start grilling it. Yep.
And then I can. And I have to know when to back off. I said, "You did great. Everything you did was spot on. That's what we're here to learn. We mm-hmm. can't miss anybody.
Right.
We can't miss anybody. And we have to go procedurally. Sometimes, what are we looking for? No change in conditions. We're going to change what we're doing. A change in conditions. We're going to change what we're doing. I
right.
had a little gal up there named Rachel who was from the MMU Ranger Unit.
Okay.
And she just broke out into tears.
Yeah, she's got it.
39 guys sitting behind her.
Right. And, talk about for the know, pressure's
I'm,
on. Yeah.
Oh, man,
yeah.
I'm doing a change of command. I'm asking for PAR and cans. I'm giving her a can and all this stuff. And she's just, let me see your documentation. And I'm looking at the clipboard. And you know, we can see out of her person, her shoulders are shaking. You know, oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel. Take a break.
Yeah.
That, can you imagine if you're really in a fire and you lost one of your guys?
Can't do it.
You can't do that.
No.
And so we had a nice talk with her. I said, I did not mean to make you feel bad, but this is there are dire consequences in our profession.
Yes.
And I think I started out by saying, I want you to know something in our industry. It's okay to cry.
Mm-hmm. Right, it's not like baseball.
It's not like Tom Hanks. Yeah,
right.
Exactly what I said.
Yeah.
No crying in baseball.
Right.
It's okay.
Uh-huh.
It's okay. You have to have this. You're not going to lose command presence if you get upset on the call.
Yeah.
Don't stop doing your job. Take care of business. But to get upset, hey, it happens.
Right.
So boy, there is that line between pushing that.
Yeah. And maybe that's what you teach them that one session is, hey, you got to that point. Okay. Now you felt it. And move forward.
Yeah.
One idea I had the other day was, okay, I'll give them two timeouts for the first scenario for that team. They get two timeouts where they go, all right, timeout. I don't know, what am I supposed to, and you can give a little teaching moment rather than let them get off track and, you know, but almost breed at first a little bit of that kind of,
hey, that's actually, a great idea.
Yeah, you really think so? You know?
I do.
Yeah.
I never thought of timeouts. Maybe I ought to just say timeout.
Yeah, you get one, or maybe you get two.
Acquire the target. That's a great idea.
You know what I mean? Go two, and then the second time you do scenario, you only get one this time, and the last one, it's
hey,
none of that.
I like that.
Just, yeah, I think, yeah, I don't know. I'm going to give it a shot this fall, so I'll let you know how it works out. But
hey, I'm going to try that.
But, you know, we'll give it a shot.
Gives them a chance.
Let me know how it goes.
Give them a chance to find those mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a timeout, right? Yeah, I should come in with Rachel. Let's take a timeout. Go over your clipboard. What do you got? Go over your command board, and we'll reacquire the target here in a couple minutes.
Right.
Good idea.
Yeah. Thanks. Well, we'll see how it works. But yeah, it is. It's almost that time to regroup. Well, I mean, in fact, you're not really going to get that in the field.
Yeah.
But it's nice to maybe it's a time for you to kind of reassess, realize where you're at some point, and move forward. And I think people like you, people that can deal with high stress, are doing that without even realizing they're doing it. That's what allows you to handle high-stress situations calmly and go, okay, here's something that's going to hit me right here. All right. So what am I going to do with this? How am I going to put this into the puzzle? What do we have already?
Yeah.
How are we going to proceed from here?
Yeah.
You know, and it's... Yeah.
I guess half jokingly with a lot of friends that are firemen and police, and we all say the same thing. I think to be successful in emergency service, you have to have a little bit of ADD.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we've got a big rock and fire. Things are going to hell. Now we're up to my speed.
Right, perfect.
Everything's slowing down.
Uh-huh.
So we always say, we must have all have ADD.
Yeah.
And then I saw a thing on PBS one night or something. They were talking about fighter pilots and what makes them tick.
Yeah.
And a psychologist was saying that I think to a degree all these guys have a form of ADD.
Mm-hmm.
They can hyper-focus.
Mm-hmm.
They can operate at that hair-on-fire speed. You know, like they said in Top Gun, that's the phrase he used. They can
mm-hmm.
they operate in that realm.
Right.
Very comfortably.
Right. It's their wheel.
Slowing down. You know?
That's funny. When everything's speeding up, everything slows down for them. Ah.
Yeah.
Can stretch out in this.
Yeah, so now we're not jiggling our feet at the physical classroom. You know,
right.
That's awesome.
Right. Well, speaking of that, kind of one of the stories I heard about you was being on a call, a pretty historic event.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. You know what I'm talking about?
Chowchilla.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chowchilla bus kidnapping. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because that's pretty amazing.
Sure.
Okay.
This was back in the mid-70s, and this is when the SLA stuff was going on, the Bay Area Symphonies, Liberation Army.
Right, the Patty Hearst, right.
All that stuff.
Right.
And what had happened, didn't know it at the time, but there was a couple of rich kids from the Redwood City, Mountain View area. And as the story went, the Schoenfield brothers, if I'm saying it right, I think they're still in the Pokey. But
yeah, I think they were.
Cut off from the inheritance or wanted to make a bunch of dough, and they met at their dad. And he had, one of his business interests was this Cow Rock quarry out in the Livermore Valley. Anyway, we had just been watching TV at the station, and they were talking about this. This was all over the news. And you're thinking, you know, gee, wouldn't you like to catch a guy like that? Who would take it?
Yeah.
Very much kids.
Right.
So my partner and I, we had this combination grass rig, brush rig, rescue squad thing.
So like a Johnny and Roy...
Exactly.
Back pickup truck, four-wheel drive, dualies. Right.
I can show you the picture.
All right.
You can't see that on the...
Even cool. Oh, I'll take a picture of it. It'll be on the podcast site, so you'll see it.
Heather's going to send them...
Oh, you... It's in that book she made.
Heather's going to send us some pictures. That's it right there.
Bingo, a little Dodge?
Yeah.
Kick ass.
That's it.
Are you in here?
I'm not in that picture.
Oh, okay.
But that's Randy Morris right there. Randy is right there. That was my other partner.
Fantastic. Oh, that's great.
What a trip, huh?
Yeah, that's a small... Well, it is a small world.
It
we
is.
Know that with fire and EMS.
So anyway. Now we're out in front of the station throwing the ball around. We're going to be in a charity firefighter police softball game.
Mm-hmm.
Bell goes off for a industrial accident in Cal Rock Quarry. Happened all the time. Had
right.
A bunch of minimum wage workers working in this gravel quarry. So we go out there. Turn into the gravel driveway, and there's a drainage ditch there with a bunch of that licorice weed in it.
Uh-huh.
Big long driveway.
Yep.
And this guy comes flying out. This man comes flying out. We thought his underwear was a bathing suit, covered in mud. And just wet mud. And we're going, oh, crap. Slam on the brakes. Randy slams on the brakes. And he says, I'm the bus driver from Chowchilla. All the kids are buried underground out there.
Yeah.
And there's people with machine guns.
Uh-huh.
And...
Yeah, you could see these people, or he's relating. Yeah. So you're still going to the call. This guy pops out of nowhere.
Yeah, this
spill.
Is a big brushy area. There's brush and gravel piles all across,
right.
You know.
Okay.
And so he goes, I'm the bus driver from Chowchilla, and they all got machine guns.
Holy cow.
And in about 30 seconds there, we're going, what? And then he goes, I think there is something. So we get out of the rig, pull it over, we jump down into the drainage ditch, ran behind this guy. And I've got that big Robert Shaw, we used to call them resuscitators, medical kit, big orange plastic thing, big giant heavy thing.
Yeah.
Drag that out of the compartment down into the ditch, trying to figure out what to do. We're scared shitless.
Yeah.
In French.
Yeah.
And Randy and I are looking at each other like, crap. I said, where are the kids? And he goes, they're buried. They're buried underground down there. Chimney Christmas. And... I said, can you show me? I'm not going back there. So we have to have Randy stay there with him. I take the medical kit, take the portable. No idea. And I go crawling down there.
Sounds perfectly okay.
Where to go. There's a cinder block building right there, a little thing where it's like a maintenance shop. Mm-hmm. And I go around there, and he had told me there's plywood with big boxes and batteries. Found that, big tractor batteries on plywood. The plywood's pushed aside. I'm looking in a hole that was like a big cement, kind of an irrigation pipe thing in the ground.
Okay, right.
And there, I looked down in there, and there's about five or six kids standing in this hole, all looking up at me, and they've got water up to their knees.
Holy!
I know there's 26 kids, and some. Oh, yeah. Lord, where's the rest of them?
Right.
And I said,
drowning.
Where's the rest of you? They're in. They're down here. They're in here. Oh, Jesus. So I said, I don't want to take the medical kit down there. So I leave that up there. I said, if I get in there, can we get back up? Yeah, we got the bus driver up. We got this. Two older kids, teenagers, actually were really solid.
Uh huh.
Jumped down in there, and he said, they're in there. Shine my light in there. And they had cut a hole in the side of that cement pipe thing. And there was they had buried a trailer, you know, like a tractor trailer. They had buried the trailer.
Right.
They went out there, folks owned it, so they got on a backhoe or out there and just dug a hole and buried it.
Right.
And they had these little cheesy vents going up, we learned later, to the ground for air. There wasn't enough air, really, but... got in there, the water's up to you about your knees. There's pieces of Wonder Bread and bologna and wrappers floating out.
And rations, right, okay.
And bunk beds and craps and matches are floating. They're all huddled in the corner.
Wow, okay.
And I said, I'm the fire department. I said, and I started counting, how many of you are in here? And they told me the number jived.
Yep.
Is everybody okay? And I was trying to get to all scaring them. Is anybody, nobody's dead, everybody's here, we're okay. So I get the kids, some of them were pretty shocky. Some of them were okay. We got them out, and that cinder block building was a little maintenance room. I thought, yeah, it was pretty bulletproof.
Mm-hmm.
So the older kids and I, we got them, all the kids out. I said, I want you to stay low and just jam into that maintenance room, right, into that door right there.
Right. Serpentine.
Yeah.
Go.
It's
yeah.
Just a workbench like this deep,
yeah,
around the perimeter.
A couple feet deep. Yeah.
So I said, go over there. I said, get into those benches, all of you, and just get there and stay there and be quiet. Don't do a thing.
Yeah.
So we got them all out, got them all in there, got my kit ready, and was just kind of doing a quick assessment, a rapid triage thing on everybody. Everybody was stable.
Great.
It was fine.
Yeah.
So now what do I do? So I'm not hearing Randy. He doesn't want to go back up to the rig. I didn't know that at the time. So I call ALCA, our dispatch,
mm-hmm.
And there was a program in those days called the CEDAR program where we took people that otherwise wouldn't have got a job and tried to train them.
Uh-huh.
So our dispatchers were SETA trainees.
Okay, great.
So,
oh, that's fantastic.
So fire, this is 786. Mm-hmm. I need law enforcement code 3 to my location. And she wanted the nature of the call. What was going on? I have to tell PD what's going on, sheriffs, what's going on.
Right.
And I'm freaking out. And I'm looking at, trying to get up to look out the window, and there are these kids. Jesus. And I said, I need law enforcement ASAP to my location right now. This was in the days when everybody had CB radios. And
so they got, yeah.
Everybody
and their mother could have this and be listening, especially if you were SLA with a bunch of kids, you want to be listening to the scanner.
Yeah. Everybody had those crystals for fire and police and sheriff.
The ham radio, right.
So, and I finally just got pissed off at her, you know. And I said, Alco Fire, this is 7S6. This is an 1199, and that is shots fired, officer down.
Right.
And there's like a 10-second pause. And she goes, is this a fire unit? Is this a fire unit?
Oh, Jesus.
And I'm like, this is 7S6. I've got the kids from Chow Chow that were buried underground in the bus driver, and I've got people here armed. Boy, that changed everything.
Good, finally.
First guy came down the driveway was a Iowa Patrol motorcycle officer. And I guess he stopped at Randy. Randy said he's down there with the kids because Randy could hear the traffic in the squad. So he hauls ass down to where I am. And this was the coolest thing I ever saw. He locks up his bike, slides it, and kind of dismounts off the bike. And he's got this big old 6-inch Colt Python pistol.
He's beautiful.
Out at the same time. Fire, where are you? Fire, fire patrol. There's something over here. I'm over here in the green building. So he comes in, scrambles in there. Everybody okay? What's going on? And then the whole cavalry came. Sheriff's cars, Livermore PD, started coming down the driveway and fanning out, you know, looking around. And, boy, I was breathing easier then.
Right.
And another cool thing I saw across the highway, across 680 in Dublin, Camp Harch used to be a military reserve training base.
Okay.
And just so happens there was some guys from, like, the 5th Ranger Battalion where they're doing their drill.
Yeah.
Their summer drill or something. So here comes two Hueys. They slam into the ground, and these guys come flying out in full regalia with M16s. You know, and you could hear the rifle company lieutenant giving orders, you go there, you go there.
Yeah.
And went back to the station, got the kids transported out, went back to the station, was being interviewed by the gal from KTVU there at Eileen Corral at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then this big guy stands in front of me in a blue suit and says, FBI, you guys aren't talking to anybody, you're not saying a thing. You're not doing anything. Absolutely understood. The unfortunate thing about that whole call was about a half hour after we had done what we had done, a sheriff's command bus had came in, Alameda County Sheriff's command bus came in, and there was a lieutenant that became what we would call now the incident commander. And he came from the Santa Rita prison across the highway there, which is by Camp Arts.
Right.
And didn't think anything at the time. He took care of the whole scene. You know, it was a police officer.
He's running as an IC, right.
He's running as IC. And then later on down the road, up comes this book, this paperback book called Where Are Our Children? And he wrote the book. And he wrote it like he made the rescue. And fire wasn't even mentioned. Brandon and I weren't even mentioned in it.
Jesus.
And not that we're looking for accolades, but
well,
we were the ones that were out there with our asses hanging out.
Yeah, without any cover.
Without any cover. And he took credit for everything. A lot of it was fiction. Randy Nice perspective.
Well, he wasn't there.
He wasn't there until a half hour after everything happened. And we went to the fire chief, Elmer Raphael, and said, hey, have you seen this or heard this? And he looked at it. We told him how we felt. I said, this is bullshit, Elmer. We want to get a vote.
Yeah.
You write this right. This isn't my voice.
It's your voice. Oh, yeah. It's all of this. Okay. What part did you want to edit from that?
Oh, it's okay.
Yeah. No. Keep this going.
So anyway, we go, okay, this is really bad. So we went to the sheriff. We talked to the undersheriff. I apologize. We didn't talk to the sheriff. His name is Sam Bass, I think.
Uh-huh.
And he got back to us and said, this is what's going to happen. If you guys push this, it's going to make all of us look bad. Right now, we're in a good light. We did a good job. The book's unfair. But if you push this legally and go through all these gyrations, it's going to put egg on all of our faces.
Right.
So we backed off. And we said, okay.
Yeah.
And we did. I wish we kind of wouldn't have now, but...
Well,
you know what? The kids were rescued. It was a successful rescue. Nobody died. So that guy wants to write a book. Fine.
Well,
it was pretty disheartening.
It is. It's frustrating because you made the save.
Yeah.
And you're not recognized for it. You wonder how many times that happens with the real heroes of the situation.
In your life.
Yeah, in your life. But like people out there that's in history, how many of those unsung heroes there are? Where
that's what happened to Benedict Arnold. Horatio Gates got all the credit. He ended up being a traitor because of it.
I didn't know that. Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, that's my 15 minutes of fame.
It's beautiful. Well, the fame is yet to come. That's why we got this podcast going for sure. You got your partner in crime here. Did you want to
say something?
Yeah.
No.
You just didn't listen.
No, I was gonna. This part you can edit. I want to go kayaking now.
We got five minutes left.
Oh, well, I'm just going to go. Oh. I just was going to tell you that I'm going to go. But you can edit that part out.
We're leaving it.
Oh, no.
It's very organic, these podcasts. You feel the whole atmosphere, and it feels very very personal.
And, yes, I am going to put on sunscreen.
Very good. 30 SPF, please.
All right. I'll talk to you later. It's 75.
All right. Good.
Thanks for coming this week.
Thank you. It was nice meeting you. No, it was an honor. It was a joy.
I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
It's happened to a lot of people. I know that feeling, that kind of frustration there, and it's probably happened to you a couple of times. What there are those points in your career where you go, I went above and beyond, and I got nothing for it. I got, you know, I got crapped on, or I didn't get, you know. And I always think, after hearing that story, you're one of those people that takes that moment and behaves correctly. You make the right decisions afterwards, not to become jaded, not to say, well, screw it, I'm not going to do anything else. In fact, you kept promoting.
Yeah.
You know, you used it. That's all the difference between you and somebody else who would do that.
Well, to be able to promote like a safety race or something would have been cool. Get a Gillette Foamy commercial out of it.
Of course.
It's all right. It's just, that stuff happens.
How do you deal with that? I mean, you tell yourself, I mean, you just then never came in your head, well, screw it, I'm not going to do anything else for this department. I'm not going to help out. You know, it's just.
I know they did.
Yeah.
I know they did. And that, unfortunately, not a lot, but it does happen in our industry. You know, people have been treated unfairly or passed over unfairly, or things have occurred in departments where somebody got a promotion that was undeserving. And I don't have an answer. You're just going to have to handle it based on the situation. If you feel like you were treated unfairly and it's not, and you think if you push that issue, is it in the best interest of the department? Is it in the best interest of the fire service as a whole? Mm-hmm. Or is it going to bring discredit on us by crying foul? You're just going to have to make that choice by yourself. Like you do.
Right.
So.
Yeah, it's inspiring to see the way you handled that. Other things I noticed, just the way that you, and I want to get into, how about this? What do you consider are the best attributes for leaders, for somebody who's going to be an officer, or somebody who's a leader in a group? How do you think people, I'll let you go with that.
Smart, tough, and nice.
Smart, tough, and nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Actually, Heather had told me that. Right, that's a new one for me, but I like that. It's more tough and nice. Just be compassionate, be professional.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to put those tenants, you've got to put all your folks first. You've got to put your engine company first. You've got to put your department first. Let me qualify that. You've got to put the citizenry first. And I think one of the best, I told you guys this the other day, but in my instructor class a few weeks ago, I had Jamal Fontaine from San Jose Fire.
Good man. He's going to be next on the podcast, by the way. He's excited to do it. Go on. Yeah.
Ask him to do that thing about dealing with the public.
Right.
And he says, you raise your right hand and get that badge. You can't have a bad day. If you're getting tired of going to the same house because that person's got gout in their leg, unfortunately, that gout is going to be the most important thing for you that day.
It's what you signed up for.
It's
you're
what
right.
You signed up for. Yeah. It gets hard.
Of course.
It's hard. You're in a busy house and you're running medical aids that you don't think are good, hard qualified EMS calls, and you're going to the city of frequent flyers is what we call them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the same guy, the same person. You know, Jimmy Christmas, why are you calling us at 3 a.m?
Mm-hmm.
You got to make believe that's the most important person, the most important call you ever went on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's tough to do.
It is.
And I've had my challenges on that too.
Yeah.
Okay. You've got to refill your diabetic medicine.
Right.
You've got to have some personal accountability here.
Right.
But you've got to be polite and pleasant and professional. You've got to take care of them. So, being a good leader, boy. It might be as simple as something as watching a movie like Major Dick Winters, the 101st Airborne. Sometimes if you just see how a leader acts, maybe that's enough to trigger some people.
Yeah.
This is how it's done.
Yeah.
This is how it's done.
Yeah.
You watch a movie like We Were Soldiers with Mel Gibson. That's how it's done. That is how it's done. Even if there is some artistic license from Hollywood involved, that's how it's done.
That's ideally how you would like a leader to behave,
how
right?
How you should be. That's how you should be. Yeah. And as you're coming up, even in outside the fire service, the 4-year firefighter, but in here, Learn from the bad ones, too. You look at the ones you wouldn't want to emulate. Note to self, I don't want to be like that. I don't. I know how he's or she's perceived.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the person I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be this person. I want to be Captain Mike McCann.
Right.
That's who I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And just keep doing that. Keep doing that. And pretty soon you'll have cherried out that good person who's that good leader.
Right.
Throw your own good stuff in there. I think a thing that's a barrier to a lot of people is their degree of insecurity. Everybody's got insecurities.
Sure.
Everybody.
Yep.
And if you can be honest and ask your wife or friends or family, you know, where are the holes in me?
Yeah.
What are my insecurities? You know, do I not take constructive criticism?
Yep.
Do I always have to be right?
Check. Keep going. Yeah. Keep going. Yeah. So far, I'm shooting 1,000. Go on. Yeah.
And first thing you got to do, get over those insecurities and realize you got them. Everybody else has got them.
Yeah.
And try to power through them.
Yeah.
And you might have to compensate for them.
Uh huh.
And that's where you become a good leader. I think good leaders are trainable, but you got to start with the individual. What are my insecurities? Is everybody wrong but me? Am I self-conscious about something? Are my ears big? Am I a little chubby? Am I short? Am I too tall and gangly? Whatever it is that's bugging you, embrace
yep.
it. The things you can't change, you know, that's that old hippie thing. Man, you can't change it. You can't make yourself shorter or taller.
And taller, right. Embrace it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That shouldn't matter. But boy, trying to convince somebody that that's not how the world perceives you. Everybody thinks you're a great person. You could care less if you have a big nose.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah.
Some people are way too hard. Right. They think everything stems from whatever their insecurity. Yeah. Their nose. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, lead with that. No pun intended.
Right.
I'm John. I got a big nose.
Yeah. Cyrano de Bergerac. Here it is. That's all I got. And it's true, but it is, I think it goes back to that embracing what you are, being brutally honest with yourself, know your strengths and weaknesses,
yeah.
and lead by example from there, you know, and teach people, if I can do this, I'm managing everything, my strengths,
yeah.
my weaknesses. It's a work in progress,
it
you
is.
Know?
It's constant.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, everything seems to be a teachable moment, you know, a work for you, for me to communicate better with somebody else, right?
It is.
To attain something.
And don't be too hard on yourself. I see people lose that too. You know?
Yeah.
So look in the mirror once in a while and tell yourself, hey, quit beating up on my friend.
Right, right.
I like this guy. Leave
yeah.
him alone.
Give yeah.
him a break.
Easy on that guy. Are you, am I this mean to everybody else, or is it just I'm just this mean to myself?
Yeah, look in the mirror. Would you quit beating up on my buddy?
Yeah. That's good. That's good. Well, again, just like I said, you're an incredible teacher, an amazing leader. I'd follow you into battle any day.
Make my head big. That is.
Well, it'll help you buoyant when you go rafting.
Rafting.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I appreciate those kind of words.
No, it really is true. Yeah.
As an instructor, you couldn't have said kinder words to me than that.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad that I take it. You know, I don't know. It's hard to accept compliments. I'm sure you don't like it either. But try and find this. I'm trying to give you the nuggets that I've noticed so that you can take them as factual and you don't have to go, oh, it's just me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's very human. You're very humanizing. What really stuck out, I went, holy crap, that's amazing, was when you're saying you have to, when you have to be the captain, when you have to be the authority, you're like, I feel like I've kind of lost that battle. Like, almost like when you have to be part of the lead, when you have to be the one that enforces the law, it's like everything you've done before is
a failure.
It's a failure. You've failed
yeah.
in every other step.
If you have to put the hammer down, where'd yeah. I go wrong?
Yeah. If I have to be captain, then yeah. I'm really, I've right. screwed up somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the downside of the job.
Right. That's crazy talk, but it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Yes.
Any lasting things you wanna put out there for people aspiring for becoming a leader, for teaching people, inspiring others?
I think everybody in our industry should be a teacher in one form or another. Everybody, especially the climate we're in now. We have so many. We've had such a huge turnover. We are um, we've lost a bit of depth through nobody's fault. Right. These young people that are coming in are going to just, they're going to shine. But everybody should become an instructor because of that, especially nowadays.
Yeah.
We've all got
right.
to immerse ourselves in a discipline. When you immerse yourself in a discipline, you only have to pick one or two. Until you retire, then you want to get crazy like me.
Yeah.
But just pick a couple of disciplines and perfect it and share it with everybody. And if you do that, I can't think of a better way to become proficient in a subject matter than to teach it. Because you're
That's
just
very true.
In it all the time.
Right.
You got to keep upgrading, and you got to constantly research. You just can't. You can't read the book once. I mean, things in our industry are changing so rapidly, with managerial concepts. How we do human resources, command is changing. You know, science is getting us to the point now where it's not a conversation over the coffee table in the morning. Now you can push fire. No, you can't. Well, we know we can't push fire. Science has proven it.
Right.
UL firefighter NIST has proven it. So that discussion's over.
It's factual. Yeah, scientific
That's
evidence.
Factual stuff.
Yeah.
So even here, I mean, especially being retired, I have to, and I'm always asking my students questions. And I hear something new. We're not doing that anymore. We're doing tablet command. Okay, I need to get out there and take a class on tablet command and go out and work. I'm going to go ride with a BC in Stockton. Play with tablet command so I know what the blazes I'm talking about.
Right. Well, the teachers probably know it. Right.
Because the guys want to plug it in. Hey, can I use tablet command? And they go, okay. So I better understand it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, you go to school as much as you teach. That means you're being a good teacher. I'm sure in medical.
Same thing.
You've got to constantly.
You should. People don't have to, but they should. It just depends on why you're doing it, you know.
Kind of like the military. Volunteer for everything.
Yeah.
Get on that hazmat team.
Get on the highest echelon. Yeah. Yeah. Get on that team. Get on the one that always makes the most.
School like Dick Winters did. You know?
Exactly.
Surround yourself with hard-charging people.
Yep.
And it'll make you a hard charger.
It does. You rise to the level of the people around you.
You bet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Always play tennis with somebody better than you.
There you go. Exactly. Well, that's why I took this class. That's what I hopefully will do is rise to a higher level because of you. So I appreciate this, Chief. Thank you so much, sir. Well, at the very least, I will be coming back here taking several more courses for sure. Once again, it's Fire Instruction out of Oakdale, California. Fireinstruction.org? Okay. And you're partnered also with Columbia Southern University?
Southern University. You
okay.
Take just one class here. You become a learning partner, and we'll give you that tuition discount and the free textbooks they offer.
Free textbooks is a huge perk.
I can't recommend the college enough.
Uh-huh.
And like I always have to tell firefighters, no, I don't get a cut.
Right.
Okay. Be nice.
I think we should set something up at least. Yeah, great.
Yeah.
So. Everyone out there, if you're interested in getting any kind of fire training, which you all should be, this is the place to go. There'll be a whole new set of the company officer series starting next year in 2017. You'll run three cycles of the series.
The entire series for company officer and chief officer.
And chief officer, got it.
It'll be offered three times a year.
Right.
So you can kind of pick and choose what fits your schedule.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Everyone look into it. Chief, thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
All right, buddy.
All right, we'll talk soon.